Support for this podcast comes from Facebook. Running a business is challenging in 2020. That's why many small business owners are turning to Facebook tools. Owners like Stasha Harris, founder of the Brooklyn hair studio Magic Fingers. When she couldn't meet clients in person, she held braiding tutorials over Instagram Live for thousands of her followers. Stasha kept going, even when the rest of the world stopped. Connect to the customers you're looking for with Facebook tools. Visit facebook.com/smallbusiness.
Welcome to The John Roa Show, a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. This is Leading from Home, a special limited series where I'll be checking in with leaders and entrepreneurs from across the country on how they're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. It's Monday, April 27th, 47 days since the pandemic began. We're currently experiencing the largest shift in the workforce since World War II. Millions of Americans have lost their jobs, and many others are still adjusting to working remotely. Companies are having to find solutions that allow employees to work from home with varying levels of success. Some companies, like consulting giant Accenture, had largely already converted to a remote workforce, so you may think this feels just like another day at the office for them. Except there's one caveat. Accenture employs 500,000 people. Yes, you heard that right, over 500,000 employees. To put that in context, there are 60 countries in the world with populations of under 500,000. And today's guest is one of the folks responsible for that workforce at Accenture in her role as Human Resources Lead and Managing Director. Wendy Cambor joins us today to talk about how Accenture is managing through the crisis with such an unbelievably large global team. We'll also hear how she's using this time to connect with coworkers and meeting the COVID-19 challenges with creativity and kindness. You're definitely seeing people, you know, rise up during this crazy time. And it's going to be interesting to hear your perspective on that, given that that the amount of people that you have to think about is unfathomable. And I'll never forget, I have a story for you. So I used to run a user experience design consulting company. It started 10 years ago, ran in Chicago, and we actually worked with Accenture Interactive. And I learned a lot about the company then, and may or may not have been in acquisition discussions with that group 5 years later.
And strictly hypothetically.
Hypothetically. And I will never forget the first time I learned how many employees Accenture has.
I was going to say, I know the metric that this leads to. Yep.
You know, because I think everyone thinks of big companies. And to me, you know, I'm a startup guy. And so, you know, startup is like single digit people. And then when you get to the teens, into the hundreds, you're doing well. Into the thousands is just unfathomable. I mean, that is, I can't even imagine 1,000 employees of a company. Like, then we got acquired by Salesforce. I went and worked for them. And it was like, 16,000. And that was a number that was difficult to wrap my head around that any company could have.
Yeah, and in that space, that's the biggest and broadest there is,
yeah.
Right?
And then you look at Accenture, and the number fluctuates, I know, but it's somewhere around the 500,000 employee mark. 500,000 employees globally.
A little over 500,000 globally right now in 130 countries. Yes.
Every time I hear it, every single time I hear it, it's difficult to comprehend. And
it's also predominantly, almost exclusively professional workers too.
Yes.
So it's not like, you know, so many companies that you start to think about, well, who's got a lot of employees? You know, they're not, you know, shop floor workers or
right.
clerks. I mean, these are professionals and highly skilled and highly specialized across industries, across specializations as well. So not only is it a broad workforce, but it's a diverse and highly skilled workforce.
Yes. And you have the pleasure of, from what I understand, being pretty much in the driver's seat and the decision maker for most of those 500,000 people globally.
I don't know about that, but I will say that, you know, we are an organization that is fundamentally about talent. so by being in a senior role in human resources, it is, you know, a fortunate role of being at the intersection of the business that we do and the people who we attract and retain and skill to do that work. So for me, I would say it is a completely exciting and unique opportunity to build on, you know, my career, which is not in HR. It's pretty much a Wall Street career.
Mm-hmm.
And to really have an opportunity on the biggest platform there is to make a difference in the way that people work and live.
And a distinguished career with highly prestigious institutions, Cornell University, Fidelity, Morgan Stanley. And your perspective on this is going to be so unique to the podcast. I've talked to a lot of smart people, but no one that is at a level of oversight in a global way, such as yourself. And I'd love to hear how you're enduring, how you're getting through this insane time that is a global pandemic, being in the driver's seat, or, you know, if you're going to be humble about it, close to the driver's seat of that many people who are uniquely feeling something all at the same time, which is somewhat of an unprecedented global event, but also having extremely unique situations, occurrences, et cetera, depending on locality, depending on the, you know, the severity of how much they've been affected, depending on their job status, et cetera. So just, you know, it's a big question. You can kind of start wherever you want. How has this affected you, you know, your employees in Accenture?
One thing that I'd like to mention is for quite a long time, as we've interacted with CEOs and C-suite executives in my role, that's typically in discussing talent transformation. So as you've described, you know, it's quite astonishing to think about over 500,000 people. I add to that, it's even more intriguing and, you know, to not be humble, impressive to know that we actually pivoted those 500,000 people to a digital workforce in a matter of years.
Well, and everyone's reaction has been completely different than I've spoken to, because you have people, everyone's appreciating that the world is changing rapidly and it's probably never going to be the exact same. But no one can agree on what that means. You have, you know, different leaders and different, you know, walks of life who are saying we're learning a lot and maybe realizing new ways to optimize our business. You have people who are saying we're learning a lot and we hate the new learnings and we want to go back to what was working before. And I completely understand the advantage that Accenture had being almost unpurposely ahead of this. It's not that you were preparing to be a virtual company because there was a global pandemic coming. You just so happened to be in a position that almost led into that. And, you know, one thing I'm hearing from a lot of, you know, leaders that I've talked to in the last month, or I think it's been a month I've been doing this podcast, is all of these, all of, you know, all the table stake things you just mentioned are really important. But there's an entire tier of concerns, challenges, difficulties that are more on that human level of people that are suddenly adapting to this new walk of life. And I'm guessing those are things that you've already had to overcome, right? The psychological aspects of not interacting with human beings and employees all day, you know, the different, you know, the areas of globalization that you're up against, of how do you keep people subscribe to a mission and a goal inside of a corporate entity when they can't see each other or interact, or they have, you know, potentially different levels of loyalty given that they're sitting in their living room all day. And now with people being anxious and scared and sick and all of these different aspects, how are all of those kind of entering into your thinking well outside of the functionality of working from home?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. I'll tell you a little bit about my story. And really, the reason that I came to Accenture is really the reason that these aspects of who the organization is, not only from a technology perspective, but really fundamentally from our values perspective, enable us to, I think, support our people uniquely at this time. So I actually started my career at Anderson Consulting in 1988, which was the precursor to Accenture, straight out of engineering school, when it was a very different company, a private organization, actually, before the IPO, much smaller and much more focused management consulting work as an extension of the accounting business.
You don't have to confirm or deny this, but those were, I've heard some pretty crazy stories about those, about that era of management consulting.
Oh. Well, if you consider, you know, pantyhose and, you know, calf length, gray flannel skirt suits and briefcases, crazy, then, crazy it was. It was a, okay. It was a very different time. And I think you might be alluding to a work hard, play hard mentality. And I would not deny that either. So, you know, it definitely, as I went through the other chapters of my career, I really did continue to go back to the fundamental building blocks that I learned during those times about working hard and solving problems and really being able to diagnose client problems and come up with, you know, viable solutions and deliver them as I went to Fidelity Investments and then Morgan Stanley and then actually, you know, founding my own boutique hedge fund consultancy. So I think that, you know, how I lead during this time is, you know, how I hope I lead at all times. And I think it's three things. It's to be present, to be authentic, and to be kind.
Break that down for me, because those are obviously incredibly core values. What do those mean, though, especially in a company of your size? How did you communicate that to every single person that might be feeling things that are that are incredibly diverse? I mean, I'm sure there's people who have been sick. There's probably people who have passed away inside the organization or close family members. How do you communicate those values to people? How do they know they're taken care of in a company of that size?
Yep. So let me start with being present, right? I think that we immediately, you know, mobilize on this front for our people. You know, of course, there's an elaborate crisis response, right? We have a command center, we have case management, we mobilize resources to address the acute issues related to COVID immediately, right? We ensured that the work from home capabilities were addressed, you know, for those who may not have been in that practice and getting them, you know, the hardware and the technology, software and training. Our health and public service team putting together things for New York City schools to enable them to turn the schools into daycare centers for first responders and also providing takeaway food for New York City students who are not in school. Because there's about 1.7 million students in New York City, and 75% of them get their breakfast and lunch at school, right? So our consulting work continues, and we needed to ensure that people had access to what they needed to organize our resources. We've also been able to work with states to help them with their unemployment call centers, et cetera. So, you know, there's lots of client work going on, but we also, to answer your question, you know, need to be present to ensure that, you know, we have empathy for the individuals, their families, and their cultures. You know, we've always had a philosophy and a value that you bring your whole self to work. You know, we care for the individual and we care for their families as well. You know, it's such a striking difference from the first time that I worked for this company. You know, the world has changed, but particularly this organization has changed, you know, that I don't think, you know, 30 years ago, you know, you would talk about your spouse or your kids or your issues or your home life. And now we very much talk about that. And we very much bring to the forefront what people might need in terms of mental health. And we have a program director globally who leads our mental health. And we put up just for this time special resources for people to connect and get what they need in terms of mental health.
I want to stop on mental health. This is such an important topic, especially right now, because we are in the middle of a very physically manifesting crisis, right? It's a virus that causes a physical ailment that can, you know, that can extend different directions. The symptoms are physical, everything is physical, and we're physically in our homes, but the mental side of all of this is unbelievably detrimental, maybe even in ways we can't appreciate until we see them play out over the next number of months. And you're hearing a little bit about it. You're hearing certain, you know, snippets of what you can do to, you know, stay sane inside your homes, working from home, or places to get support. But if you were to do a ratio of that compared to the physical side we're hearing about, it's not even a smidge. So, you know, I think about it a lot. It's a topic that I care a lot about, things I've dealt with my whole life. I write about them extensively in my book. I've talked to a lot of friends and colleagues about this in the last number of weeks. And it's great to hear that a company like yours is putting a focus on this. What does that mean, though? What are these resources you're giving your employees? What are your perspectives on it for how this might affect people's mental health during a crisis like this? Just any insight you have, I think, would be really interesting.
Of course, we have mental health allies. So we have special training related to the unique concerns around COVID and people feeling isolated, you know, in their homes. So people can become trained as allies and people can reach out and connect with allies. We have a partnership with Thrive Global and have created customized training online where you can, you know, really do some intensive work around self-reflection and understanding your own customized ways to take care of yourself and your mental health at this time, you know, and really recognizing that self-care is not self-indulgence. And we're working very hard to expand and ensure that people understand what's available to them from a benefits perspective, things like the employee assistance program, you know, being completely confidential and available for them as well as their family members. So, you know, encouraging people who may not have ever, you know, considered speaking to a professional, you know, that these are unprecedented times and, you know, that free benefit is available to them or, you know, the people in their family. I even find personally, I have days where I can, you know, throw myself into my work and feel productive and feel connected. And then other moments where, you know, I'm sitting here in New York and, you know, it all becomes intense and visceral. And one wonders, you know, who am I going to know who's going to die? And, you know, so I think, you know, that brings me to, you know, the other thing I mentioned, which is this idea of being present. Everything professionally and personally goes out the window in terms of, you know, how did we do this last time, right? You know, I think we have to focus on, you know, what problem is there to solve? You know, what's our opportunity for, you know, in my profession, our clients as well as our people. And I think working with human resources professionals is, you know, particularly interesting because our people are, you know, on the front lines of, you know, supporting our people who, you know, may have COVID, may be experiencing difficulties or trauma related to COVID. You know, I also think the idea of being present is, you know, really thinking about things and innovating in the moment, right? So what is really, you know, what can we do right here, right now? And one of the things I want to give as an example for that is, you know, I mentioned this idea of sort of stripping away the things, you know, that sort of used to get in the way. Our CHRO and a couple of other CHROs got on the phone a few weeks ago, you know, and they said, how can we get the world back to work? Right? One goal, one simple goal, right? But simple goals are not always, you know, simple to implement. You know, understanding that we're experiencing the largest shift in the workforce since World War II, I think we're looking at about 18% unemployment now. And we're leading these organizations that have tremendous workforces. The result of this conversation was, is called People Plus Work Connect. And in essence, it's a very straightforward talent exchange, business to business, right? To connect organizations that need talent and talent where organizations need to furlough and in some cases release talent.
You made an interesting point earlier about how to make sure that the people that are offering the help are also getting help and kind of how you've, you know, yourself. So this is a topic that I've thought and talked about quite a bit is where it's difficult to say kind of, you know, succinctly, but as you climb in hierarchy inside of an organization or any kind of system, the support obviously in somewhat flows downwards, right? You look, you know, to your, the person, to your manager or to your, you know, to your boss as the person who's supporting you. And then they're looking to their boss, et cetera, but it has to stop somewhere. Right. And there's gotta be places in your organization where it stops with you, right? Where this is, you know, an extension of a conversation I had with the head coach of the LA Rams, Sean McVay. And he's like, you know, I'm a coachable guy. He's like, I've learned everything I know through people coaching me. He's like, now I am the coach. So there's no one left to coach me. And he's like, that's a huge, you know, gap in how I can learn and thrive and grow as a person now, because everyone's looking at him for them to coach them. And there's no one he can look up to anymore inside his organization. So I'm guessing there's got to be similar things that happen in large corporations like yours, where at some point it's like you are expected to be looking after and taking care of people. But are there people looking after you and taking care of you? And when you're going through the same challenge as everyone else is?
I think that's a really interesting quote and point of view, because I think that the older I get and the more professionally I advance, the more I am learning and open to learning and
not even just learning, though, support. Yeah, like when you're feeling bad, when you're looking for resources, because you're building needs for the people that you're supporting. But do you feel like you have the same support when you need something or you're struggling with something?
I do. And I think that I'm not constrained by hierarchy. And perhaps that is a female mindset about leadership, you know, and you as someone who, you know, thinks about leadership, you know, and it's interesting, it's not only a male you reference, but it's someone who's literally in sports for a profession.
Yeah.
I think that many of our ideas and rubrics around leadership have historically been masculine and in fact been sports oriented. You know, even our vernacular is points on the board, advancing the ball, getting a home run, you know, and I think that, you know, we've inherited this very male way of thinking about leading, when I think slowly but surely we're seeing women and some men who lead in a different way that is more aligned to a less masculine way of leading that's not hierarchical, that says I've gotten to the top and now there's no one to coach me, but more that a leader in, as I envision it, and it's actually, I go back to a work by Sally Helgeson who refers to the web of inclusion, where that the mindset and the way of thriving as a leader sees the leader in the center of the web with concentric circles around her. And she's almost a gardener and nurturer with these sort of vectors moving and changing as the input is needed. And it's very much multi-directional, which I think is fundamentally very different from, you know, rising, and a top-down way of leading, and really thinking about leadership as cultivating, nurturing, observing, you know, really communicating and collaborating. Where I get help is definitely from, you know, the people more senior to me and my leaders who have, you know, our CEO globally, our CEO in North America, our global CHRO, who have absolutely, you know, within days of this becoming a pandemic, taken to, you know, open for a video conferencing town halls with ample time for Q&A. And it really comes back to, you know, I think my third thing was, you know, to be authentic, right? And right. if we don't, as leaders, have, you know, transparency to our own life and work, you know, and what's working and what's not, we don't have trust. And if we don't have trust, you know, then the whole thing falls apart. I've recently taken post in this role as North America Future Talent and thinking about our organization and, you know, who we hire and how we hire them and, you know, how we look at the future. You know, the incumbent leader is now at home with two small children. And obviously I could interpret, I couldn't see it because she was doing such a good balancing act that it was, you know, an issue. And I said to her, you know, tell me about your kids. How old are your kids? This and that. And then I said, put them on, you know, put them on the screen, you know. Mm-hmm. And I started talking to her 5-year-old, you know, and I said, do you like, you know, dinosaurs? Do you like this? Do you like that? You know, I had a conversation with him. And, you know, what transpired is, you know, I read to him and his little brother every afternoon.
I love the story about the kids, and I don't have any myself, but I have a 3.5-year-old niece who I've been talking to on video daily and, you know, trying to help her and help her understand, even though it's difficult to get grasp at that age. I guess even at my age, it's difficult to grasp what's going on, but for a kid, it's very difficult to understand, you know, how this is all impacting and affecting them. And, you know, it's great to be able to have those breaks in your day that you just described. And,
I think it's really important too. Understand that this for all of us is a grieving process, whether we're conscious of it or not. You know, with another person who works on my team, you know, I was having a one-on-one with her and I was talking with her, you know, and I said, how are the wedding plans coming and this and that? This was at the beginning, right? And she said, oh, we put the wedding plans on hold and we kept having the meeting, you know, and I went to bed that night. You know, and this was when New York was starting to have a lot of deaths, and we have the trucks with the humming at night, with the bodies overflowing in Central Park, with the, you know, looks like a World War One movie with, you know, tents, and, you know, it's just epic, right? And, you know, but I got to thinking about it at night. So I called her the next day and I said, listen, you know, when we were going through the project yesterday, you know, and I asked about your wedding. I've always enjoyed hearing about your wedding plans because, you know, it brings me joy. And you mentioned that it's on hold. And then we kept talking about work, you know, and I wanted you to know that I was thinking about that and how devastating that must be. And, you know, you have the right to grieve that. And just because it seems small and personal relative to, you know, what's going on in the world, that's still a loss for you. And I'm sorry that this is happening and that you're apart from your family and you don't know when this will end or how you'll celebrate your marriage. You know, I want you to know I'm sorry, you know, and I said, do you have a wedding dress? Can I see a picture? And, you know, again, just sort of recognizing that everybody's experiencing something deeply personal. And to be kind, you know, like I said earlier, to be super, super kind, you know?
Well, Wendy, that's great. It's awesome. I love hearing the perspective, and it's such a unique and important perspective with somebody who has so much, you know, oversight over so many people in such an important role. The messages about leadership and compassion and empathy through this are something that I've heard consistently amongst people who are leading well through this kind of crisis, but not always at the same kind of scale that you are enduring and learning quickly about the best ways to lead through. So this was so great. Really enjoyed talking to you. I know you have a busy day and we've been here a bit longer than we had said at the beginning. So I'll let you get back to your Monday or whatever day it is and look forward to hopefully meeting in New York at some point once we're back, you know, loud back outside again.
Thank you so much for your time and for thinking about and leading the way and talking to interesting people about such an important topic.
Absolutely. It's an important time to capture is what I'm going to think about as a time capsule going forward for how we endured during this and hopefully some learnings and lessons for the next time we have to lead through adversity. So I really do appreciate the time again. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
A big thanks to Wendy for being on the show. Her three values is really great advice for any leader currently going through the pandemic. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe, leave a review, or share with a friend. 100% of the profits from this limited series will be donated to charities helping people through the pandemic. If you're currently leading from home or you're an entrepreneur who wants to talk through something or get some advice, I want to hear from you. Head over to roa.com/podcast. That's roa.com/podcast for ways to connect with me. Or hit me on social media at John Roa. It's J-O-H-N-R-O-A. The John Roa Show is a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. For more podcasts from us, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows. A special thanks to my producers, Jordan Gaspore here at the show, and Tyler Klein over at iHeartRadio. We'll be back with you on Wednesday. In the meantime, stay safe out there.
What's up? I am Machine Gun Kelly, and look, I know Halloween is going to suck this year because there's no trick-or-treating and all that, but I've got a treat. There's a musical podcast that I made with my friends 24K Golden, Ian Dior, and Dana Dentata, and Satan. Well, Satan's not my friend, but Tommy Lee is, and Tommy Lee is playing Satan. But don't just take it from me. Tell him, Satan.
Thanks, dude. It feels great to be playing Satan on this podcast. Listen to Halloween in Hell on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or whatever you get your podcasts on.